Before I begin to try to say something about Trinity, the Trinity, just a word about this fairly ferocious sounding last line from this passage from John. This is typically Johannine thought when he says, if you don't believe, you're already condemned. This is because John thinks, and this caused all kinds of problems for the later Johannine community, that you'd have, if you didn't believe in Jesus, that was a positive act of rebellion and resistance to God. Now, I don't think it works that neatly. Certainly it does not today. I mean, if you talk about where God is today, where a lot of people want to locate God, I want to say, well, hang on, folks, I'm not so sure about all that. Okay, so this is this is Trinity Sunday. It has always struck me as kind of odd that, first of all, it took several centuries before this Jesus movement began to see God as tri-personal, triune. Huh? It did not happen instantaneously. It's just like the divinity of Christ. It took a long time thinking, praying, living to sort that out. But even having said that, you know, just ask yourself, how aware are we of God as triune in our own lives? I have a very hard time with that. I'm ashamed to admit, but I think that is the case. So what I want to propose today is maybe some aids to incarnating our belief in the Trinity into the way we perceive the world and operate in it. And I'd like to take as a cue that stunning line from the creation story in Genesis, where God is made to say, well, let us make human beings in our own image. So we believe that we are somehow made in the image of God. What does that mean? Well, there's been an enormous amount of ink spilled on that subject. Some people fasten on the freedom of God, that unlike every other creature that God makes, that we as free beings, as able to choose and respond to the world, are godlike in that. Some others have suggested it is the creativity of God, that God can make something out of nothing, and we human beings, in analogous fashion, can do that. We can make lectures or symphonies or bridges or carburetors or all kinds of other things. You know? And there's, however, I think it is possible to look at the classic roles ascribed to the persons of the Trinity and see how fruitful this might be for appropriating the Trinitarian belief. So God is spoken of economically by the early fathers, that is, what God does. Each person of the Trinity is assigned a different role. So God the Father creates, God the Son redeems, and God the Spirit sanctifies. That's helpful. That's one way of doing it. And certainly there's a long tradition of that. And I think it is possible, looking more closely, praying more deeply, thinking more, that is too reflected in our humanity. We literally, I think, create each other. I mean, I'm not just talking about biologically. The people that we are is the result of our interactions with each other. I really do believe we create each other, for weal or woe, granted. But in the most positive and fundamental sense, creativity is the evoking, the evincing of something new, something wonderful. And we do this with each other. We really do. I mean, we Canadians are at something of a disadvantage in this regard, I think. I grew up early part of my life in the States, and one of the few things that I would prefer the States over Canada to is the fact that Americans tend to be more overt in their self-presentation. I mean, we are super cautious, I think, as a culture here. We feel that if you wear your heart on your sleeve, that's a case of indecent exposure, and so therefore everybody kind of draws back from that as an unhappy thing. But I'm not so sure. And I bring that up because it is precisely the self-presentation to each other whereby we affect this creativity. We really do. I mean, it's precisely when people conceal themselves that the possibility of creativity, of our mutual creation, is lost. Now, granted, there are enormous problems about this, phoniness and self-deception and all kinds of other stuff, but none of that reduces, I think, the basic truth that we do create each other. And in creating each other, we also create ourselves. And I think we save each other, too. From what? From a sense of radical solitude? Which I think is characteristic, especially since the Enlightenment and all kinds of other historical, cultural developments, above all in the West, that we are steadfastly solitary in our thinking and our perception of the world. But we're not. And to some extent, I think it takes a leap of faith to appropriate that belief. But we're not solitary. We do redeem each other in a very real sense from some of the, I mean, take the case of grief, for example. When people grieve, there's clearly a redemptive presence. I was at a funeral for one of the large people last week, and it was quite amazing. You know, this gathering of people, this in-gathering, this mutual support. Or that wonderful film, Into the Wild, which I hope everybody will see. There's this young man, very angry, justifiably, at all kinds of things, and going out to live this radically solitary life. And before he dies by a kind of fluke, and this is a true story, he carved into a piece of wood, "Happiness is not real unless it is shared." And to bring real, authentic joy. Again, there are phony forms of all this stuff. I just take that as a given. But unless happiness is shared, it's not real. I mean, it's sort of stillborn. And we do make each other holy. We do sanctify each other. Look at your own history. As I look at my history and think of who are the people who have brought me closer to God. There are people who brought me closer to God. There's Sister Mary Margaret. There's Father Bedard. There's my spiritual director at Notre Dame. There are these pivotal people in my life. There are people here in London who have done that. And what I'm calling myself to, and you to, is a greater awareness of where we are in the world. Because we are so wary, because we are so cautious, because it sounds like a kind of extravagant excess to even imagine our interconnectedness in that fashion, I think we resist that. But I truly think that the celebration of the Feast of the Trinity, of God as triune, and ourselves as images of God, is a great opportunity to look at what is there, but which we, for whatever reason, ignore, or walk past, or dismiss, at our own cost, I think. Impoverish ourselves to the extent that we resist that kind of awareness, that we fail to appropriate our interconnectedness. Again, it is highly ambiguous. So is everything else in human existence. That goes without saying. But the ambiguity does not destroy or eradicate the fundamental truth that we do create each other. We do save each other. We do sanctify each other. If you don't believe it, look at the alternatives. Remove everybody else from the world, and where are we? We're no place and nobody. So that notion of the economic trinity, the functional understanding of God, I think is useful and helpful. But there, the Greek fathers particularly used to talk about God for us, pros humon, and God in God's self. And here too, I think the Trinity offers some really profound and enriching ways of understanding ourselves. John passage says, God so loved the world. Why? Why does God love the world? Because the world is God's creation, and that's what God does. That's God's business. That's God's professional description, if you will. As I've said over and over, God does not judge, God does not punish, God does not reward, God simply loves. And then, again, the Greek fathers want to go inside of God, not just God's action in creating the world. But what do these three realities, because to even speak of them as persons is to use an analogy, they're totally self-giving to each other, totally, without reserve. There's a wonderful, if highly abstract, term for this. They're subsistent relations. Subsistent relations. The persons of the Trinity are subsistent relations. They only exist insofar as they give themselves to each other. But that radical self-donation is precisely what constitutes the Godhead. Think about it. I mean, the most fundamental reality we believe is this radical transparency, this radical mutuality, this radical and total self-donation. And that's what we're called to. To participate. We talk cavalierly sometimes about participating in the divine life. What does that mean? It means this. It means being absorbed into that enormous dynamic of self-giving, a radical openness and availability to each other. I think the problem, finally, with all this stuff, it is it's unimaginable, given the world as it is, given the way we in fact do operate. But Paul said, to hope is to hope beyond hope, huh? And so on this Feast of the Trinity, I would suggest to me, first of all, and to you, that to hope to appropriate more profoundly the implications of believing in God as triune is really what we're called to.